Here for Lingua Franca this week. Hello, hello, I'm Maria Zylstra. One of the keynote speakers from the International Association for Translation and Intercultural Studies conference held over the past week in Melbourne, Shehnaz Tahir Gulchalah, telling the story of how, despite that Arabic, for Muslims, is the language of heaven, in which God sent his word, the Quran, and so is the language for its recitation as prayer, the idea to replace it with a Turkish language version, beginning just with the call to prayer, was attempted in Turkey, but failed. Still, for a period of 18 years between 1932 and 1950, the Islamic call to prayer, the azan, sung five times daily, was compulsorily delivered in the Turkish language rather than in Arabic. Just to get the context, though, this was still a less than a decade-old republic being formed out of the demise of the Ottoman Empire, with the emphasis on creating a secular state and to sever the ties of the young nation with its Islamic past. Its charismatic leader and president, Atatürk, was a dedicated reformist and, in what was in effect one-party rule, the Kemalist system of government made such things as monogamy and Western dress obligatory, as well as Western surnames, and in fact, in that time of great upheaval, made an incredibly drastic language reform, changing the script and content of Ottoman Turkish, which was full of Persian and Arabic loanwords and grammatical forms, in order to purify and make more Turkish Turkish, but that alienated Turkish language users from the centuries of written words in Ottoman Turkish and created much confusion instead of clarification, and that's still something of an obstacle today. Would you perhaps start your extraordinary story just there, please, Professor Tahir Gulchalah?
Yeah. In 1928, Atatürk, who was the founder and the leader of the Turkish Republic then, decided to introduce the Latin alphabet to replace the Ottoman script, which was based on the Arabic script. And he actually foresaw a very short transition period, which created a lot of problems, of course, for the citizens, for the publishing industry, for the press and everything else. But he was very clear that this reform had to be done. And, of course, the aim was twofold. One was to make sure that the alphabet was easier to learn, therefore it would increase the rate of literacy in the country, which was only 10% when the republic was founded. And of course, the second aim was to detach the country from its Islamic roots, so to say, by creating a shift from the Arabic script into the Roman alphabet.
He wanted to westernize the country also. Was that also part of that?
That's right. Well, westernization to him was modernization, so to create a new civilization. So westernization was not just for the sake of imitating the West as such, but it was there to create a renaissance, to create a new nation.
And it didn't end there. In fact, in 1932, a ban was placed on the recitation of the call to prayer in Arabic.
That's right.
And it was replaced with a Turkish translation, pretty radical given the centrality of the Arabic language in Islam.
That's right. It was a radical move, and it wasn't without its opponents. Many people, including the followers of Atatürk, objected the move. They thought it was too radical. But Atatürk insisted because he said he believed that Turks can actually get closer to Islam by understanding Islam and its principles in their own language. And he started out with the ezan, the call to prayer, but his ultimate goal was actually a fully Turkified Quran and the use of a Turkish Quran in worship, in Muslim worship, but that never materialized. There are translations of the Quran in Turkish, but there was no imposition regarding their use in worship, unlike the Turkish ezan.
Well, if we just stick with that call to prayer, the ezan, that Turkish translation had actually been personally overseen by the father of the Turkish Republic, Mustafa Kemal Atatürk himself. I never knew he had such a role as a translator.
Yeah, well, he didn't personally translate, but and not the whole text of the ezan, but a part of the ezan, which we call tekbir, the exaltation, the expression, God is great, Allahu Akbar, was translated under his supervision. He convened a team of hafiz, famous reciters of Quran, to find a Turkish translation for that expression. And he actually listened to the different versions that they presented, and he chose the one that would be used in the ezan.
And he chose the most Turkish version.
Exactly, yeah. He chose the one that carried the word Tanrı and not Allah, which was, again, quite radical for its time. But he chose the version that carried the word Tanrı to replace Allah.
And that was the standard translation then? It became the standard translation? It was produced and distributed to all mosques in 1932?
Yeah, the standardized version came in 1933, and it was sent to all mosques, and it became mandatory.
And until 1950, there was a ban on the recitation of the Muslim call to prayer in Arabic, punishable by law, and there was a prison sentence.
That's right, prison sentence of 3 months, yeah. It was radical. And, well, I should say at least that during the time the ban on the Arabic ezan existed, people didn't really have a chance to raise their voices. I mean, there were certain protests, certain political incidences against the Turkish ezan, but people didn't really have an environment where they can share their ideas freely. And that kind of an environment exists today, and I think that is what is good about it. Now we're able to openly discuss these issues.
Mm-hmm.
Although the Turkish call to prayer was abolished in a way in 1950, because when the ban on the Arabic call to prayer was lifted, everyone went back to the Arabic original. It shows you that perhaps the Turkish one was not fully embraced by the people. They preferred the Arabic original. But to this day, the discussion on the choice of the word Tanrı to replace Allah continues. And, you know, there are supporters and there are opponents. But it has created a lot of energy. It has created a lively debate in the public sphere.
Yes, half a century later, after the ban was lifted, it's still a hot topic,
yes,
is that overstating it?
No, it is a hot topic, yes. I mean, you just need to look at the internet and, you know, look up the word ezan in Turkish, and you will see all the online fora that continue this discussion.
But despite that, the call to prayer, the ezan, the Turkish ezan, isn't used today.
No, it's not used.
What's the big topic then if it's not used?
Yeah, the topic is no longer confined to the Turkish ezan. The topic has turned into a discussion of secularism, a discussion of the proper language of worship, and now I think it's turned into a political and ideological discussion rather than a religious one. And the supporters of the Turkish ezan are usually those who don't practice Islam per se. Therefore, they don't feel the need to have their own version of the call to prayer. And those who regularly visit the mosque for their ritual prayers prefer the Arabic original. Therefore, the Turkish ezan is never used.
There isn't any group, or there aren't any people who take up a middle position, who mm-hmm. perhaps think that why couldn't it be done in a range of languages or a choice of languages?
That's right. Well, the general opinion is that you can have the Turkish ezan and the Arabic ezan, and there are, of course, other minority languages in Turkey, but they have not formally made a demand to have ezan in their own languages. That has not happened. But a lot of people think, you know, you can have the Turkish translation to understand the meaning, but you should keep the Arabic original to use it as a religious ritual. So the translation can exist, but not as a part of worship, but as a part of understanding your religion better.
It's said that the Quran in Turkish, or the ezan, the call to prayer in Turkish, is for your mind, whereas the Quran in Arabic is for your soul.
That's right, yeah. One individual writing in one of the online discussion forums on the issue said, read the Quran in Arabic for your soul and read it in Turkish for your mind to be able to understand the message, but not to pray.
Mm. It surprises me, though, given that there is this precedent, which hasn't happened really anywhere else, I don't think, that the call to prayer was used in the vernacular or in the language of the people, that there isn't an edge, that it hasn't kind of created a desire or or an openness to use it. Do you yourself perhaps have an explanation for why that's so?
I think people separate the mundane or the secular life from their religious life. And although they are all for, you know, developing the Turkish language, not perhaps purifying the Turkish language, but sticking to the Turkish language as opposed to bringing in or borrowing foreign words from Western languages, for instance, they do prefer to stick to the Turkish language, but they see it as different from the practice of Islam. And to them, Islam is a religion that can only be practiced in the original language that it was sent. And that, to them, has to do with the sacred qualities of the Arabic language as the language of God, whereas Turkish is the language of the nation and is the language of people.
So there is this distinction that is always maintained.
Well, Islam has always been practiced in Arabic in Turkey. Although the Friday sermons were given in Arabic before the Republic.
So that's the major teaching lesson from the pulpit for the
week. That's right. Well, Friday is the holiday for Muslims, and the noon prayer is very important on Fridays. And at that prayer, you have the imam, the preacher, giving a sermon. And that sermon can be from the Quran, or it can also touch upon many daily issues or social issues. And again, in the 1930s, in 1932, in fact, the first Turkish sermon was given. And it is now quite customary to have Friday sermons given in Turkish. So that reform, so to say, has stayed. Nobody objects to it nowadays.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Associate Professor of Translation Studies at the Bosphorus University in Istanbul in Turkey, Shinaz Tahir Gucalar. We were talking about the keynote address that she gave at the International Association for Translation and Intercultural Studies conference held at Monash University last week. Its theme was mediation and conflict, translation and culture in a global context, and the many speakers amply demonstrated time and again how translation can lead to strife rather than understanding. And what a marvellous array of topics and talents there was to be had. I hope to bring you more in future editions of Lingua Franca, but in the meantime, visit the Lingua Franca website to find some relevant links, why don't you? Via the ABC Radio National site at abc.net.au/rn, or just add another slash in Lingua Franca as one word, and here you are. Broadcast each week on Saturday afternoon and replayed at the same time of 3:45 on Thursday afternoon, the four most recently broadcast Lingua Franca programs are always available as audio on demand from the website. And you can, of course, subscribe to this program's podcast at the Radio National website. I'm Maria Zylstra, looking forward to more talk about language again when next we meet. Dui!
Hello, Monica Attard here. On Sunday Profile, Luca Belgiorno Nettis. He and his two brothers inherited a massive industrial empire built by their father Franco, only to see it torn apart in a bitter family feud. Almost a decade on, what's become of Transfield and the brothers? Luca Belgiorno Nettis on his family, his philanthropic interests and his passion for reforming Australia's political system. And you can stream and download this podcast interview from the Radio National website.